Illinois Clean Energy versus Phylan, Mr. Brody. Where are you, Mr. Brody?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Michael Brody, and I'm here on behalf of defendant and appellant John Phylan, who was sued in his official capacity as Director of the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. I think that probably the place, as in most cases, to begin here is with the facts and with the circumstances under which the entity at issue, the Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation, was founded. When Commonwealth Edison determined to sell or began to consider the possibility of selling its fossil fuel plants, there was no question that that transaction was going to require oversight and intervention and involvement on the part of the General Assembly and the Illinois Commerce Commission. As that transaction evolved and as the legislation which was ultimately passed relating to it was formulated, the legislature made a series of policy judgments about the circumstances under which it was prepared to see that transaction go forward, and it memorialized those judgments in legislation. One of the judgments it made was that it was not prepared to approve the transaction unless $250 million of the proceeds were committed to clean energy and conservation clauses.
Well, it forced them to set up this foundation.
So I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It forced them, in other words, to set up this foundation.
If they wanted to go ahead with the transaction,
right.
Absolutely.
But it was set up as a private foundation. So I mean, the state could have taken their money or done whatever it wanted, I suppose. But if it wants them to form a private foundation, it's a private foundation.
Why? Well, private in one sense? I guess the question is private in what
company.
Sense?
It's, you know. Look, when a corporation is granted a charter by the state, you know, there are all sorts of restrictions, what it can do and so on and so forth, but it's still a private entity. And why is this any different?
Well, it's no different, for example, than Amtrak was. Amtrak
oh, it's
is...
it's very different from Amtrak.
Well,
Amtrak, you know, was like the Postal Service, but this is a foundation. It's not run by government officials. It's Commonwealth Edison's money.
Right? With due respect,
I mean,
Your Honor.
You've stipulated a lot of things it has to do, but I don't see what difference that makes.
Well, let me draw the analogies for you, Your Honor. Amtrak is chartered under the District of Columbia Business Corporation Act. It is chartered as a private, for-profit corporation, just as ICECF is chartered under the Not-for-Profit Act here.
Sure, Amtrak, but look, that case is not pertinent because that's about the First Amendment. So Amtrak, because it has a public flavor to it, doesn't want to carry certain ads. And similarly, if you said to this ICECF that they can't, you know, advertise against the environment, something like that. They can't denounce environmental laws. Well, one could see that as a reasonable restriction. That's different. But taking all their money away is rather different.
Well, but from the outset, their money was, if you will, taken away. $25 million of the money was dedicated by statute to clean coal research. $1 million a year was dedicated.
Sure, but look, a corporation charter says, look, you get a corporation charter, you have to buy it. You can't be a corporation unless you buy the charter from the state. It's not that expensive, but suppose, you know, for a big corporation, they charged $1 million for a charter. Well, that wouldn't mean they could come back a few years later and say, oh, by the way, since we chartered you and you paid us, we're taking all your assets back.
But that's not what happened in this case, Your Honor. The assets.
I think it's
that
very similar. They grant this foundation charter with all sorts of restrictions and, you know, make them pay this and that and the other. But nevertheless, it is a private foundation, and its assets presumably belong to it. State can't snatch them back.
Your Honor, if it's a private foundation and if it has a property right in these assets that rises to the level that's governed by the Fifth Amendment, then obviously it's governed by the Fifth Amendment.
Well, these funds are invested in private banks and in brokerage accounts, and they're also, the funds are expended without appropriation by the legislature, right?
Just as funds in any number of other entities which have been directed by legislatures and legislative amendments are
But under the Constitution,
the
expenditure of public funds require an act of appropriation by the legislature. Doesn't Article 8, Section 2B say that? And they expend funds here all the time without acts of the legislature. When we're looking at the nature of the entity.
We're looking at two issues, I think. One is the nature of the entity, and the other is the nature of the property interest. This entity cannot do a lot of things with its money. And the reason it cannot do those things is because the legislature.
But that's true of
mandated.
Any corporation. Corporation is set up for particular purposes, and it can't use its money for other things.
No, what's different is the legislature doesn't tell a corporation how to spend its money, or if it does, as in the sinking fund cases, it does so because the direction is within the scope of the legislative grant or authority over the corporation. Here, the corporation, this
sure
money could
does.
Have been.
There are all sorts of specialized corporation, you know, community service organizations, and especially with charities, there are all sorts of restrictions placed on what charities can do with them.
Not of this sort, Your Honor. I mean, this is a sui generis piece of legislation that makes direction that is unique in Illinois, that vests selection of the trusteeship to officers of the state of Illinois. I mean, that's not true of the community trust.
Well, I think that's your best argument. It is, of course, unusual to have the officials designating the officers. I agree with that.
Well, is this simply the fact that Commonwealth Edison gave, $250 million of their money to a private or to a entity that was established under a legislation that has no government responsibilities, and you take half of the money back?
No, it's not a case like that, Your Honor. For several
reasons.
Tell
me where I was wrong.
Okay. First of all, it wasn't Commonwealth Edison's money. Commonwealth Edison only had the right to the proceeds of that sale, if and to the extent, because it's regulated, because these were fully depreciated plants, because utilities are not entitled to recover beyond the reasonable rate of return is established. They were only entitled to those proceeds insofar as the government elected to grant them, made the judgment.
So it was coming without Edison's money, though?
Not only if it was expended. As
well, what would have happened to that money, the proceeds of this sale, what would have happened to them if it hadn't been for this legislation?
Well, of course, we never got there, so we don't know. But my guess is that it would have gone back to the ratepayers, that it would have been return in excess of the reasonable rate of return. My guess is also that
But of course, that's not what you're proposing to do with this money.
Well, we're proposing to spend it on behalf of the people of Illinois.
Well, please.
I mean, we're not writing a check to the ratepayers, of course.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. But your
argument is it wasn't Commonwealth Edison's money, but they had a right to direct where it was going.
No, they didn't have the right to direct where it was going. The only way in which a judgment could be made about where it would go was if the legislature made that judgment, which it did.
But it wasn't going to happen. Two steps, what you wouldn't have done in one. That is, presumably, you wouldn't have said. I mean, you could say, maybe, I don't know the intricacies of this, but maybe you could have said, yes, they'd have to, the $250 million that they got, they'd have to pass it on to the ratepayers in the form of lower rates. But could you have also said, no, they have to deposit that in the Illinois Treasury?
Sure.
Really?
Absolutely, they could have. They could have assessed a tax on it. They could have said they could have assessed a levied a tax on the transaction.
100% tax?
No, it was a multi-billion dollar transaction. This was only a small portion of it. They could have.
What do you mean a small portion?
Of the overall fossil fuel plant sale, I believe it was.
What was the $250
million? $250 million was a portion of the proceeds of Commonwealth Edison's sale of fossil fuel plants. That transaction was in the multiple billions, I'm sorry.
No. What was the $250
million? It was a portion of that.
What
proceeds.
Portion? What do you mean, a portion?
You mean what percentage? I just don't know. I'm sorry, sir.
Are you saying Commonwealth Edison sold these properties for a much larger amount?
They sold them for a substantial multiple of book value. I forget it was.
What is the significance of this $250 million figure?
$250 million was, in essence, the negotiated amount that Commonwealth Edison and the legislature agreed would be appropriate to dedicate to the public.
I see.
Interest.
But you're saying Commonwealth Edison actually made more money than
that? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, the transaction wouldn't have gone through if, and Commonwealth Edison didn't have to go through with the transaction. But what was negotiated was the circumstances under which the state would use its regulatory authority over the transaction to allow it to proceed. The legislation, and it's, you know, an extended piece of legislation, reflected a lot of judgments on the legislature's part as to the circumstances.
But you're saying, you know, that you're saying the state had the whip hand. It could have given the money to the ratepayers. It could have taken it. It could have put it in the Illinois Treasury. It could have taken more, more than $250 million. But instead, you know, it set up this private foundation. So why aren't you stuck with that?
Private. It's a foundation that the state controls.
The state doesn't control it. You're suing. What do you mean the state controls? You've got a lawsuit with it. How can you say the state controls it?
You represent the state, and you're
in a lawsuit with them.
In the same way,
you control them. Why do we have this lawsuit?
In the same way.
Well, answer that question.
Well, I'd love to, Your Honor, and I'm trying to. And let me give you two reasons why that's not evidence of lack of control. The first is that's exactly the argument that was made in the Girard Trust case, exactly the argument. And the Supreme Court said that really isn't the question. The question is whether this is the government acting through a privately funded
that's
trust.
That's a really weak press. I mean, you know, it's like a paragraph-long opinion.
Terms of the trustees here, do they serve at the pleasure of the legislature or the governor? In other words, can the governor or the legislators fire the appointees?
The charter says that they can.
That
yes.
They can or cannot.
They can remove the state officers can remove at will their designees.
Why didn't they do that and change this nature of this lawsuit, or in fact eliminate it?
Well, maybe
fire that. You've got a majority. Fire the board of directors and end the lawsuit.
The answer, I think, Your Honor, is that the state passed a piece of legislation directly.
But they made a choice, and now they're stuck with the fact you set up this corporation, which now is being alleged to be a private entity, and you can't get the money back.
And if we had, Your Honor, we would be here arguing whether or not the removal of those trustees was lawful.
Yes, because where do you see a removal? I don't see that.
It's not in the legislation. It's in the charter. I believe it's in the bylaws, and it's cited.
It's not in the legislation.
No, it's not in the legislation. The appointment power is in the legislation. The charter and bylaws specify a removal power. I see I'm out of time.
But and do you know what section that is? Because I didn't see that anywhere. I could have overlooked it. That is the removal.
The removal, yes. Yeah. It's in the, I believe it's in the bylaws.
Well, you can look for it. I don't want you to use up the rest of your time
sure.
doing that. You can let us know in rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brody. Mr. Boies?
May it please the Court, Wilbur Boies for the Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation. It feels a bit odd to be standing up here in the year 2004 and talking to this court about things like the sinking fund cases from the 1870s and Dartmouth College from 1819, but those are not quaint citations. They're not background. Those cases define the rights of private citizens and entities to have protection of their property under the federal Constitution, and unfortunately, I represent
maybe
a foundation that needs those protections.
Maybe you could clarify this removal issue.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me, Your Honor?
Maybe you could clarify this removal issue.
On the trustees.
Oh, the bylaws? Yes.
Yes.
The place to look for that is in the appendix at page 50. There is a bylaw provision that says that the five different state officials in Commonwealth Edison who can appoint members of the board can also remove them. It is not in the statute. It was put into the bylaws by the foundation board. It can be taken out by the foundation board. There has been no action to remove any member of the board as a result of the board's refusing to turn over the funds and filing this lawsuit. More generally, Judge Posner, you suggested it's an interesting question about how the trustees stand. I'd like to go to that immediately for a minute if I could. Here's where the trustees stand. These trustees act independently because they operate through an Illinois not-for-profit corporation. They have fiduciary duties under the Not-for-Profit Corporation Act. They have fiduciary duties under the Illinois Charitable Trust Act. And the case law recognizes that those fiduciary duties are to the institution and not to the government. And I would refer the court to the railroad reorganization cases, the Supreme Court in 1974. That was the Conrail case. In which the Supreme Court said, once you put this organization in place, once it's underway, its publicly appointed board members have a duty not to the government but to the shareholders of the institution. More generally, Your Honor, if we go back and take a look at the tests of whether I think, Judge Williams, you recognize this as both a question of the nature of the entity and also the nature of the property. And if I could speak for just a minute to the nature of the entity first, the result is the same whether you look at the state or the federal cases. In fact, the case law tells you to look to the state cases to determine the nature of this corporate entity. Rule 17B of the federal rule says you do that to decide whether it can sue and be sued and so forth. What happened here? What happened is that Commonwealth Edison elected to go ahead with the process of incorporation. They incorporated this not-for-profit separately. There is no doubt Commonwealth Edison did it. The district court spoke to the point that the act authorized the utility to create the foundation. It wasn't mandated. And I would point out, as we did in our briefs, that in fact the state of Illinois has three programs for clean energy grant making, entirely different than what they've done there. Those programs referred to in our brief at page 19, the Renewable Energy Resources Program. It's run out of the state treasury. It's funded by appropriations, Judge Williams, and everyone who runs it works for the State Department of Commerce. Legislature knew perfectly well how to create that kind of an entity when it wanted to. Instead, what it did here was authorize a regulated entity to create a private foundation. The fact of the appointment, I spoke to the trustees acting independently. The appointment power, Judge Posner, is not control. As a practical matter, you're perfectly right. I'm standing here because my client hired me to stand here, and the state of Illinois didn't do anything to stop us. But the case law says the same thing. Marcella against Brandywine Hospital, that's the Red Cross case, makes exactly the same point. Trustees of the Red Cross are appointed by the president. The Third Circuit says, well, that's not control of the operations of the foundation. The employees of this foundation are not state employees. None of them are. The Illinois cases, Rockford newspaper, says that's an extremely significant determinant of whether an institution is public or private. The foundation was unarguably privately funded. This was not an appropriation from the state of Illinois. I should emphasize that the source matters a lot with respect to both standing to sue under Dartmouth College and the remedies. There's no factual dispute here about what happened. Commonwealth Edison was offered, in effect, a deal with the state. Commonwealth Edison established the foundation. It transferred $225 million of its own money by a wire transfer into an account at the LaSalle Bank. That was a foundation account. There has never been a dime of state funding. And I contrast this again with the clean energy appropriations that the state uses.
Is there any difference between the standing issue and the private property issue as a practical matter?
Well, I think they're frankly interrelated in this situation. We gave the court a supplemental citation to a case called Texas Catastrophic Property Insurance against Morales, which a Fifth Circuit case from a few years ago, which has to do with a state created, state mandated in that case, Judge Posner, institution that handled catastrophic insurance claims from floods and so forth. And there was a fight over how the money, which had to be contributed to that institution by the private insurance companies, was to be administered and how it was to be used. The Fifth Circuit said in that case that the private contributors, even though this was a state-mandated institution, that the private contributors as well as the institution both had, first of all, standing to sue, and secondly, that there was a private property right in the money that they had contributed under the takings clause. And I think the same situation applies here.
My question is there any different analysis of the standing and the property issue? That is, could you have a case where the entity had standing but it had no private property, or where it didn't have standing but it did have private.
Well, they are separate issues in one sense. And if you wanted to look, for example, at Phillips against Washington Legal Foundation, which is the latest of the Supreme Court's cases about trust funds, the IOLTA accounts. And what the Supreme Court actually did in that one is to say that there is a takings issue. The money appears to be private property. They looked to state law, but they didn't decide it, Judge Posner. They remanded it for a decision by the lower court applying state law to determine whether there was private property and therefore a taking in the interest. So it's a two-step analysis. But frankly, we're there. We're there under Dartmouth College itself, because if you go way back to Dartmouth College, what Justice Marshall spent a long time in the front of the opinion talking about was the standing of the private institution to assert constitutional rights. And, of course, the Supreme Court said they had the standing. And then he said, all right, we'll turn to the property question. And what he said about that still controls here. The property, the assets of Dartmouth College were contributed by private donors in reliance on the state charter. In that case, it was actually a charter going back to the King of England, but in reliance on the state charter. And then along comes the state of New Hampshire. It wants to do an amendment to the charter to take control of the property, and the court says on the merits. That's a taking. And, of course, that's the seminal case on the takings issue. So I think what Justice Marshall did is what we're asking this court to do, not only decide the standing issue, but to decide the issue on the merits in exactly the same way. If I could, Your Honor, just a few other points. The Illinois cases also say it's important to decide how the entity functions. This one functions as a private foundation. Not only is it incorporated, it is registered under the Illinois Charitable Trust Act. And it registers, ironically enough, with the Attorney General's office, who Mr. Brody was hired to represent, registers with the Charitable Trust Division as a private foundation. Outside of this courtroom, the Attorney General's office, in the area of charitable trust administration, has treated this as a private foundation. And it's registered with the Internal Revenue Service as a 501c4 charitable foundation. And importantly, we mentioned in our brief at page 34, the application to the federal government to obtain that status limits the funding that our foundation can give to government agencies to limited types of joint grants. What the state of Illinois proposes to do by statute would destroy us as a foundation because it would destroy our federal not-for-profit corporate status.
What's your taxation status with regard to the state of Illinois?
We are a registered Illinois charitable trust. We are tax-exempt as a result of that. That is the regulatory process, Judge Caney, that the Attorney General's office administers. We file every year as a private foundation, not as a state agency. State agencies can't even file under those procedures.
I'm sorry, what would happen to you if they took the money away?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
You said, I just missed it, before you were before you answered, Judge Kane, you were saying something about if they took your money away, it would affect your status as a foundation?
It would, Your Honor, as a registered 501c4 tax-exempt federal foundation. And the reason for that is that if you go back and take a look in our bylaw, well, in our application for federal charitable tax exemption, we committed to give private grants and to use money in connection with the state only for what are called joint grants with the state to someone else. In other words, if we turn around and give $125 million to the state because they order us to, we are in contravention of our own federal tax.
But couldn't you refile or something? Because a state can be a charitable object, an object of charity.
Your Honor, the state can be the object of charity. In this case, however, this institution, acting privately, determined its own limitations on its own grants, and that happened to be one of them.
But couldn't you revise those?
It could be revised, Your Honor, and whether we'd be able to pull that off with the Internal Revenue Service is a question that we have not had to face.
I had just one follow-up question on the board and the nature of the board. Since they serve at the pleasure of the governor and other members of the legislature, how does that affect the private-public analysis?
It simply doesn't affect it at all, Your Honor, and I would refer you to a couple of federal cases and a couple of state cases that say exactly that. The state case is the one having to do with the city of Evanston, which is discussed in our briefs, has power of appointment over the members of a board of an organization that manages part of downtown Evanston. And the Illinois courts say that is not controlled by the state of Illinois. They expect those board members to act independently.
Well, also, isn't it the case now, so there are six members?
There are six voting members.
Six. So one of them is a Commonwealth Edison.
One appointed by Commonwealth Edison.
And are two of them sort of minority, I mean, you know, political minority figures?
Your Honor, they are exactly. The way it breaks down is that the governor appoints one, Commonwealth Edison appoints one, the majority leader in the Senate appoints one, the minority leader in the House, the majority leader appoints one, the minority leader appoints one. Your Honor, we can only speculate as to the practical possibilities of trying to get the people to hold those offices together.
So it's the governor and two majority legislative figures who are. That's three, and the other three presumably would not necessarily agree.
To put it bluntly, Your Honor, if the governor could get two votes from his own party on this issue and try to do it, he couldn't remove a majority of the board if he wanted to.
And then they're non-voting members as well.
They're non-voting members. They don't figure in this.
Right.
How long are the terms?
They serve a 5-year term, as I recall, Judge Kennedy. If I may speak briefly to the foundation endowment as private property, here again, this court is to look to state law to determine whether it's private property. The Supreme Court just said that in Phillips against the Washington Legal Foundation, the trust fund case. You look to state law. What are the indicia under state law? Illinois Not-for-Profit Act allows an entity like this to receive donations, allows it to hold its own property, allows it to manage its own investments. And I would contrast that again with the state programs which are run under the Illinois Public Funds Investment Act. In fact, I can't resist saying, as we noted in our brief, that Mr. Filon, before he became the head of Office of Management of the Budget, happened to be our auditor. And Mr. Filon certified our audited financial statements that reflected all of our private investments. Odd coincidence. Dissolution, what happens to our money? Doesn't go back to the state of Illinois, goes by statute to other not-for-profit corporations. Your Honor, I believe my time is close to expiring. If the court has any other questions for me.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Boies.
Thank you.
Mr. Brody, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I guess the one additional thought that I would call to your attention is this. The statute as enacted says, for example, $25 million of these funds are to go to a specific purpose, clean coal energy research. We would submit that if the legislature elected to amend that provision and make it $25.5 million or $26 million or $30 million, that would be a perfectly constitutional exercise of the sovereign's authority to amend its legislation.
Well, that would just be this case in miniature. I don't understand.
Well,
that's an interesting example for you.
I agree, they can't
cut the tail in little slices. Yeah, no.
And that's why I propose the analogy, Your Honor. It is this case in miniature.
I don't get the analogy. It seems to me if you lose this case, you lose that case.
I agree with you, but if we win that case, we also win this.
I don't know why you should win that case. You're just slicing their tail in little pieces instead of instead of slicing at the base.
Because, Your Honor, and if we have been unpersuasive in discussing these cases, I guess we've been unpersuasive.
I mean, I thought what you could say is that, you know, you can harass them, tax them, so on. Up until the point where it becomes a regulatory taking. That's true. Let me ask you about this appointment business. You know, we do have this sense, we do have this concept of independent federal agencies like the FTC and FERC and so on. And the way they are set up is that the president appoints the members, but he can only appoint, you know, a bare majority from one party. So, and yet we think of them, they're independent agencies, they're not part of the executive branch. Well, isn't this an even stronger case because the governor only appoints one of the six? And if the majority leaders happen to be of a different party, if they're the same party, well, then the minority leaders are going to be of a different party. So the governor is never going to control more than half the trustees. So, as Mr. Boies pointed out, the board could rescind this removal power. So, apparently, the state really doesn't control this entity.
Well,
they have coerced its creation, forced its creation, realistically, but it doesn't seem to control it. And, of course, there are the fiduciary obligations that the members have. So I don't know where the control resides.
I think the answer is that it's true that the Democratic Party does not control ICEC, nor does the Republican Party. But officers of the state of Illinois do. And the legislature...
They're at each other's throats, these
people.
Well,
they may or may not be, and it depends. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Well, apparently they are at each other's throats, or else you wouldn't have this lawsuit.
Your Honor, if I could direct your attention to the discussion in LeBron of precisely this point, the court observes that the president was constrained by Congress in the individuals he could select for membership on the Amtrak board. They had to come from different industry segments and so on and so forth. And what the court said was that doesn't eliminate government control. That's simply one branch
imposing a limitation on the other. But that's the context of the First Amendment. As I say, if you wanted to say to these people, I mean, suppose the foundation said, well, we're tired of all this environmental stuff. We like dirty coal. So we're going to grant, you know, $50 million to a foundation that will denounce environmental laws. Well, then LeBron would, I think, entitle the state to forbid that, because there is the governmental flavor here. But it doesn't follow that you can take their property.
Well, that presumes that a prohibition isn't a taking, but a direction is. You know, if the state can control how the property is to be expended, then it can. And if it can't, then the Constitution prohibits it.
No, but you exercise all sorts of controls over private corporations. It doesn't follow you can take their property.
Of course not. But
you can exercise controls, and government can control Amtrak and so on. Doesn't follow it can take their property.
Sometimes I get in these things, and I can't think why I can't say it in a way that makes sense. But the difference, I think, is this. There are a whole range of government-created entities, and I think we could all agree that many of them are indisputably part of the government, and many of them indisputably aren't. And there is, as always, a gray area in between. And the question that I think is posed by this case or other cases is, what attributes should we look at to find out where along the spectrum we're going to...
But don't you recognize that, as far as your tax laws, that they're private not-for-profit?
They are registered... No. In fact, I don't think so. They are treated as a not-for-profit. Whether they are private is something that was established when the legislation founding the foundation was passed. And I come back to the slicing of the tail analogy, Your Honor. There are multiple cases where indisputably private entities have had their money directed for governmental purposes by the legislature. And I would submit that the question...
It's directed into your pocket. Really?
Yes, sir.
That is not...
Directed into their pocket.
That's not what we mean by direction.
Yes, I don't want to take up other
people's
time.
Really, it's so cynical.
It's been a long time since I was accused of that, Your Honor.
Snatching the
money back. Your Honor, it is... There was never any question from the outset of this whole arrangement that the state had the right to direct this money. That's why the legislation...
But not back to you, though.
Well, if we had the right to direct it, we had the right to direct it. And in fact, the legislation says that one of the appropriate objects of the foundation is programmed by units of state government, and their charter reinforces that. That's in the legislation.
No, no. Illinois has a deficit, and this is a way of reducing the deficit. I mean, really, if we're going to be realistic...
Too bad you don't have a Skyway Bridge.
If you want to be realistic and talk about the realistic origins of this statute, well, if we're realistic, we'll be realistic about why Illinois has decided to snatch the money back. It's not because it's dissatisfaction with the foundation's efforts to promote, you know, environmental values. It's because Illinois is scrambling for any money it can lay its hands on.
And the question is whether it has the right to do that in this instance.
Right.
And
okay.
Who has the right? I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument.